the collective experience and the collective expertise that we have inside of Odyssey is unmatched. There's the, you won't find it. You just won't. I know, and I think there's a lot of great people out there in this space. You will not find what's inside of what Odyssey has to offer. And it, this paint by numbers process that we call it, and it, when they jump into this blueprint, is, you know, it's just dialed in, which is why we call it the Odyssey signature recipe. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with Whiskey Wednesday, my main man, Jake Sheehy.
What's happening? What's happening?
What's up, buddy?
Feeling great. Great day to be alive.
Great day to be alive.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it is.
Awesome.
Got some great stuff on the agenda today.
Well, let's hear it.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
We got seven things. First, your trip to Broken Bow. Second, you got your audit back. Third, interest rates are dropping. What does this mean? Fourth, we got a question in our school platform. Fifth, what is a Odyssey signature property? Six, is there any backup plan if your short-term rental isn't working out? Number seven, seasons are changing. What does this mean for you? What do you need to do? That's
wow.
What we got.
All right.
Got like, a lot of stuff like on today.
We're just going to check them off, right?
Yes, sir. We're going down the list.
All right.
First off, Broken Bow.
Broken Bow. Yeah.
How was it? What happened?
It was awesome. Yeah. Flew in. We're looking at a development deal there. We're looking at some big things happening within the Odyssey family. And in fact, those of you listening, we ought to email us in at support@odyssey.com. We got a number of different deals that if you are accredited, that you might be able to participate in. So if you're interested in chatting with us about that, this would be one of those. We're looking at about 145 acres in Broken Bow.
That's pretty cool.
That is, it's going to be an adults-only tiny home resort community. Glass houses. We've got a few of them already under construction, so they're pretty fun. These mirrored glass houses, it's a fun project. Yeah, so we were meeting with contractors and builders and different pool guys, different amenities, because it's going to be a little bit more of a mini resort that is going to be staffed and everything. And so a little bit outside of what we've done with just specifically short-term rentals. And so we're see that
something
one?
Like that.
Yeah. That see that mirror house right there? Those little mirror houses. Yeah.
That's really cool, man.
That's awesome. And they're pretty fun. So there's two of them already under construction. We're going to have a total of 29 of them. And so we're laying out different things and checking it out. And it's going to be a fun project. We've actually got a number of different projects we're working on right now that we've been working on for the past probably 6 months. We're about ready to announce them and open them up for a couple people to maybe participate with us. That's and so if you're exciting. Interested, just support@odyssey.com and just say, I'm interested in setting up a time to talk to Sean about some of the deals he's got going on.
That's a pretty exciting right there. A little teaser. Start out. All right. I like it.
Might have some ability to participate. It'll be fun.
Man, that's exciting. Those look really cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Next off the list. Here we go. Number two, you got your audit back. If people are listening, we've mentioned this audit a couple times. You got it back. Results time? Is this what's happening?
Yeah.
What
happened? So nobody ever likes to get that certified letter in the mail from the IRS saying you are getting audited.
Ooh.
And I was no different.
No.
Your heart just drops into your stomach, it feels like, and you're like, oh crap, you know. And so but this has been actually a very unique situation. Not that I want somebody to be in this situation, but it's actually, now looking back, super grateful to be able to go through this. What happened is we have almost a 3-year case study on a property that I bought very publicly in Cherry Log, Georgia. And in fact, I was on somebody else's podcast. For those of you who don't know the full story, just a 30-second review of, I was on somebody's podcast when the market shifted in 2022. And interest rates started going up and started skyrocketing. And somebody, I was on somebody's podcast and they said, you know what, the main markets are dead. And he specifically called out Destin. He called out Blue Ridge, and he called Destin, Florida, Blue Ridge, Georgia markets. And he called out the Smokies, Gatlinburg area, and said, those markets, you just can't make money. They're too saturated. Prices have gotten so high. Interest rates are so high. The short-term rental game just doesn't work. And so back then, I said, okay, I'm going to publicly go out and we'll search together. We went on my podcast, this one you're listening to, and saying, hey, listen, we're going to go out And this was middle of 2022. Mm-hmm. Rates went from, you know, 4.5% to 5% up to almost 7% overnight in about a 2-month period. And so this was a very, you know, definitely the shift in the short-term rental world. Mm. And we said, we're going to go look for properties together. We're going to tell you what we're looking for. We're going to show you, you know, keep you along this journey. And so we did through acquisition. We bought a property in Cherry Log. We took everybody through kind of our design process, our furnishing process, our launch, our marketing, everything that we were doing. Mm-hmm. We ended up, 2022 was the last year you could also have 100% bonus depreciation.
Right.
And so, and then it started phasing out. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, we also needed to materially participate. We did a cost seg on the property. So we shared all this, and it was about a year and a half long case study. We took this property from purchase to be in the number one revenue property in the market.
Right.
And by the end of the year, so for that first calendar year, by the end of December, we ended up being number one revenue property in that market. Ended up setting a high water mark in the market. Nobody had ever made as much as we had revenue-wise on a 3-bedroom. Super proud of all that. Showed the tax savings. We ended up doing a cost seg study on the property. We had like $245,000 tax write-off.
Come on.
And we were able to reduce our taxes by $95,000, all this stuff. And then this year, fast forward to the first of 2025.
Right.
And I got a letter, and it was actually the end of 2024. I got a letter saying, hey, you're getting audited for that. And so we're like, okay, well, let's see if we did it right. Right. And so, you know, we talk about this all the time, and this is, it was very good timing, if you will, because right now in 2025, there's a lot of people talking about bonus depreciation because it came back with a big, beautiful bill and came back to 100% bonus depreciation. So everybody's talking about the short-term rental loophole and being able to use these, buy these properties, huge tax savings, all of this stuff. And we're super excited about it as well. But we also kind of cringe a little bit on some of the things we hear because we know there are a lot of T's to cross and a lot of I's to dot. And it's not just as easy as going out and buying a property and, you know, getting this big tax savings, and it's just all rainbows and sunshine, right? Yeah. And so, especially if you don't do it right.
Yeah.
And so we ended up getting back. So we've been going through this audit this whole time.
Right.
We felt really good about it because of, you know, we hired Mike Pine, Kevin Schneider, the guys at Revo Tax Advocacy Group. And, you know, they were at Pineco at the time. And it was the same company, just rebranded.
Right.
And they, I mean, there are tax advisors inside of Odyssey. They're our expert advisor group. We do coaching calls with them every single Thursday for our members, right? Mm-hmm. So we knew, they knew what they were talking about and doing. Right. However, there's a lot of misinformation out there right now. So it was really fun because on Friday, I got a letter back from Kevin, and he said, hey, I just got I'm forwarding an email I got from the auditor saying that we're past the audit with no changes, with zero changes on a very aggressive, complicated tax return. Yeah. And that's pretty awesome. I mean, to get a zero change tax return is rare and from an auditor. And so we were super stoked. But what that does is, in my opinion, it puts a cherry on top of that case study because it's saying, okay, here's, and what was fun about this case study is we knew it was going to be a case study the whole time. And we have a 3-hour YouTube video of, you know, and it's different times of the year, different things, different phases, but taking you through from acquisition to setup, to marketing, to launch, to the tax side of it. And now we're getting a audit at the end of it saying, did you actually do it right?
Right.
And the auditor IRS is saying, yeah, you guys did a great job.
Wow,
you know? And so pretty amazing to be able to have that, that validation that what we're talking about is, works.
It's a tried and true system.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people are scared of the IRS, man.
Oh, I am too. I mean, trust
me. A lot of people. So then when you, I mean, when you come on to the podcast or you preach these things of how it works and these are the right things to do, some people get maybe scared or cold feet or they don't want to do it, but then have this tried and true thing where the IRS says, no, you passed, you did it right.
You did great. Yeah.
That's like that's a great cherry on top.
Oh, right? It's awesome. Yeah. We're really excited. In fact, anybody that is listening to our podcast, we'll announce it on the podcast too, but you really ought to follow us on Instagram.
Right.
I'm going to do a full live webinar walking through this case study again with Mike Pine, because it is so topic based right now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are really trying to tap into the short-term rental loophole. There's everybody and their dog is talking about it to try to get, you know, get people getting back into the short-term rental world. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, it's more complicated than people give it credit for and talk about it and done incorrectly. It's you're setting, like we just had a, one of our, the lenders that we use called, and Mike Pine called, and he said, "Hey, Sean, we gotta make sure people understand that you have to kind of begin with the end in mind. How you write these contracts matters. How you, you know, buy furnished property matters, right? It's very common when you buy a furnished property that you have a bill of sale for a dollar for the furniture, right? So that you basically are saying, hey, listen, it's going to come furnished, but you're not paying a lot extra for the furnishings. And so you can lend, you know, so the lender can look at it and say, yeah, we're going to look at this entire purchase price as the value of the home, not because you can't borrow against furniture.
Okay.
And so you have to kind of back that out. So instead of backing out 150 or 200 grand of furniture, they say, well, we're just going to leave the furniture in there. You can pay us a dollar and we'll sell. Well, the issue with that is when you go start to do, you know, your cost seg study and you start to figure out all the stuff you can depreciate, if you have $100,000 of furniture that you paid a dollar for, they're going to give you dollar value for it. And so you really can shoot yourself in the foot on the back end. It's just one little example of not knowing how to structure the deal from the beginning if you're going to plan on doing a lot of this stuff on the back end. And so, you know, it's really important to have the right team around you and the right strategy around you. The other thing that's really common is people are like, well, I'm already getting a discount on this property. I can overpay for it a little bit, or that's okay if it doesn't perform as well. So they get real lax on the underwriting on the front end. And they think, well, I need to save this money on the taxes. So if I buy this, I'm going to get a discount. All of this is true. But next year, you're not going to be singing the same tune, because you're going to say, oh, man, I got this property that's killing me. It's costing me more money than I thought. It's not making me the money I thought. And now I want to get rid of it. And now you're trying to get rid of a dog, and you have to recapture all that, those tax savings that you paid. So just really understanding the game is hard in and of itself.
Yeah.
And it sounds really good on the front end. We love it. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, this is something we do all day, every day. We help people do this all day, every day. But I get, like I said earlier, you get a little... We cringe a little bit when we hear the things that are being said and taught online.
Just the headline.
Yeah, because, and even people who have been doing it for a long time, you know, I listen to some of the things that are happening. I'm like, you're getting away with it now, but man, when you get that IRS letter, you're probably not passing, right? Because like we take a, we're going to make sure that we're going to take a, like I always tell Mike and Kevin, our accountants, I'm always like, hey, listen, you know, if you want to say like, okay, from like a scale of 1 to 10 on how aggressive do I want to be on my tax return? I want to be like a 5, you know, I'm not the guy that wants to push every limit that I can. We want to be, I want to take the savings that I can anywhere I can and pay, you know, but I don't want to be, I don't want to fly in any of that gray zone area, if you will. And there's a lot of people flying in the gray zone that if they got that letter, my guess is they're not going to have a zero change audit coming back.
Dude, that's so scary.
Right.
Okay. So I was going to, the importance of having the correct tax people around you, the correct team around you. I mean, that's a team, huge.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Any other points on that? I mean, that's a huge deal, man. That's a great.
I'm super excited. So so follow us on Instagram, listen to our podcast, because we will, in the next week or so, we're going to be, I'm going to host a live webinar. I just want to make sure Mike and Kevin can join so we can have the actual smart guys on there, CPAs, right? And so they can talk about this. But there's other strategies besides just bonus depreciation that we want to share as well, but also why we felt so confident, the things we did, the ways, the things you have to worry about to navigate so you don't walk into a buzzsaw down the line. And so we're going to go through all of that, because it's on the top of a lot of people's minds right now. And and we can say confidently now, we know what we're doing, because you know, we not only did it perform financially and it continues to perform financially, but the property passed an audit with flying colors as well when we took 100% bonus depreciation.
Man, that's awesome. That is so exciting. I love that, man. Okay, moving on to our next one. Number four, interest rates are dropping. What does this mean for people if they want to refinance, or what does this look like right here? We got our current mortgage rates and our refinance rates.
Yeah, they you know, Powell decided he was going to reduced the Fed fund rate by 25 basis points last week. The mortgage industry doesn't always follow that exactly, right? So you have to understand that. It's not like just because Powell comes out and says we're dropping by 25 basis points doesn't mean it's a quarter point drop in interest rates on the mortgage side. That's going to follow the 10-year treasury bond yield way closer, right? So that already started reacting in anticipation of the mortgage rate drop. And so, you know, that was, we saw some nice drops, like the biggest drops we've seen in over a year. I think it's the first time in over a year that we've been under 6.5 across the board. I think we're around 6.3 to 6.4, depending on whether it's a purchase or a refi. And, you know, the 20 and 15 year, both under six, which is awesome. And so there's some good refi opportunities for sure. And it's not enough of a drop that you're getting a ton of buyers back into the market. The reason this is important for some of you that are maybe wanting to be a little bit ahead of the curve and taking advantage of some buying opportunities is when rates come down really fast and or a lot, you're going to have a lot more buyers jump into the market. When a lot of buyers jump into the market, inventory is tight. All of a sudden there's multiple offers, prices start to skyrocket. So there's, there's an inverse relationship to rates and prices. When rates go down, prices go up, right? And so what you try to do, like right now is a good buying opportunity, honestly. If you're like, hey, they're coming down a bit. They're really, prices really aren't dropping yet because not everybody's jumping into the market. They came down kind of a modest amount. Possibly good refinance opportunity. But when you're purchasing, you should be, if you're in the acquisition phase, waiting for the right rate is, you know, overall is just not a good strategy. And what I mean by that is you should be looking for the best available opportunity if you're in that buying phase. It really doesn't matter whether you're paying 3% interest or 15% interest because somebody else is paying for it. It's just a line item on the pro forma, right? Does it affect our debt service? Absolutely. Does it affect our cash flow? Absolutely, right? At 10% or 12% interest, you're going to find way fewer deals that pencil out,
right?
And so it ends up being saying, hey, listen, but you're also going to find it, 3% interest, you're going to find deals that work and deals that don't work. And so you're looking at, make sure you're buying the long-term asset, right? They always say, date the rate, marry the property, right? And so realizing that if, you know, if things drop, you lock in a really good asset, it pencils at whatever we're at now, 6.3, 6.4 on the interest rate side. Maybe it's, you know, because it's an investment property, maybe you're closer to 7. And all of a sudden you're paying around 7 on your property. If it pencils, great. If it drops further and you can get it down at, you know, 6 or 5.5, refinance. It increases your cash flow for sure. But don't buy a bad, like a property that doesn't work at 7, right? You know, that's not what I'm telling you to do. I'm saying if there's a good deal that works, do it right now, because if you buy a property for 500 before everybody jumps in the market and that same property is going to, you're going to pay 6 down the line, but you're able to get it for 500 today at 6.5% interest, or you wait a year and you get it for 600,000 at 4% interest, you're way better off buying it at the 500,000 at 6.5 and then refinancing it 4 when it comes around, right? Or whatever it is.
That makes complete sense to me.
And so, because somebody else, and let's assume we're talking about long-term rental stuff, and short-term rentals are long-term assets. Somebody else is paying that. So it's just, it's an expense somebody else is paying for you. So just kind of realize what it is. You don't, you know, markets do shift around with buyers jumping in and out of the market based on rates. But investors, especially experienced investors, we watch it. We really like low rates because it helps us, you know, cash flow our properties better, and other, some properties are going to underwrite maybe a little bit better at certain rates versus others always, right? Because the lower the rate, the less your debt service is, but it's just a line item on your pro forma. And you have to kind of just look at it like that and say, hey, listen, I'm always looking for a good deal. If a good deal comes around, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. When I started my career of investing in real estate, most investment loans were around 10%. You know, this was early 2000s, you know, and like you were
10%.
Yeah, you were, if I could get an investment loan for around 9.5, 10%, I was like, if I could ever get it at like 9.5, it's like lock it in. Right. And so, you know, and you just realize that, you know, so I've been in an environment where early on in my career, they were around 9, 10%. And then you know, mid-career, they dropped all the way down 3 or 4%, right? You mm-hmm. were almost, it was almost free money for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then now they're back up, but they fluctuate in between mm-hmm. and you just have to underwrite them when you buy them mm-hmm. for what they are. Mm-hmm. And if they work, they work. If they don't, they don't.
Man, that was really educational for me. You'd rather buy at a higher interest rate because the property's less expensive, because later down the road you can change the rate with a refinance. You can't change the price of the right. property you pay for it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't go back and say, hey, listen, well, you know, the rates are now 4, but yeah. can I have yesterday's price at 500 grand instead of 600 grand? No, you're paying $100,000 more for that right. property now because it's a supply and demand issue, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Everybody jumped in. People are bidding up properties. They're paying more for properties. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, during right after COVID, mm-hmm. that was really common, super common. Mm-hmm. Low rates, mm-hmm. lots of buyers, low inventory, and everybody was bidding prices up like crazy.
Mm. That was educational. I loved it. Okay, we're going on to this this question. Manjula in our group had this right here. Advice on a Colorado STR deal.
Okay, here awesome. We go. So I'm going to read it so we get some context here. We're under okay. contract on property in Arvada, Colorado. Purchase price $1.4 million. The house is currently operating as an STR. The appraisal came back at $1.25. Mm. Mm. Yeah, $150,000 short. And that after negotiations, the sellers only agreed to lower the price to $1.35 with no repairs included. Mm. The inspection brought up some concerns as well, including a possible foundation issue. Our agent feels the repairs may be around $10,000, but based on past experience, we're cautious about taking that number at face value. Mm. On the income side, the property performed well. It did approximately $266,000 in Airbnb revenue last year, has already produced about $220,000 year to date. The challenge is that moving forward requires to bring significantly more cash to closing because of the gap between the purchase price and the appraisal. Curious whether any of you have done deals where the house did not appraise and the gap between the appraisal and purchase price was large. In the long run, did the revenue justify bridging that gap, or did it end up being a mistake? We know this is only our decision, but insights be helpful. So,
yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
Manjula, Evan, this has a couple layers to this question for sure. So, The general question is, should I pay more because it makes money, right?
Right.
And so this is probably, at a 1.35 purchase price, making 220, it's a positive cash flow property, right? Mm-hmm. It's probably making decent revenue, probably mm-hmm. a decent cash on cash return after all things are said and done on that property.
Right.
But we're overpaying mm-hmm. essentially based on just face value of appraisal, $100,000 more than what it appraised for. Mm. And so if I am able to make some really good revenue on that property, and let's say I'm making $100,000, I can kind of catch myself up in a year. Let's say I'm making net $100,000 in my pocket a year. I don't think they're probably quite there. They didn't share that information, just run the numbers off the top of my head. Mm. Probably not quite that. Mm. But let's say they catch up within a year. You can look at that and make that argument. And we have done that. I have overpaid for properties where I'm like, hey, it's a long-term asset. Mm. It's a good cash flowing asset. We're going to do that. However, there was something that was a big red flag for me when you mentioned that there are some inspection items, some repair items, and possible foundation issues.
Boom, I called it, right? Dude. I called
there you go.
It.
I got it highlighted. Yeah. So that was when you hear that.
Yeah.
And we hear major, that could be a major capital expense. Mm-hmm. Foundation issue is almost never covered if $10,000 on a property like that. So right. my guess is
right.
If so we have to really look at that as well, because that could be, depending mm-hmm. on what those capital expenses are to get it up to, you know, whatever they are, you know, those major things like foundation, sometimes foundation issues are those are, you know, we don't typically walk away from deals very often. If there are major foundation issues, that is one of the mm-hmm. things that we will typically walk away from a deal if it can't be mitigated. Yeah. And you really need to get structural engineers looking at it and getting really good opinions on, okay, how am I going to take care of this? And what is the cost going to be? Mm. Because now all of a sudden being $100,000 upside down, you could be 200 or 250. And now all of a sudden you're like, hey, listen, I dug myself a pretty deep hole to get out of even assuming revenue, mm-hmm. right? Because even though it has decent revenue, and you can catch yourself back up after a year or two, and maybe you're willing to take that risk. I'm not saying not to. I have done that for sure. Mm-hmm. But if I dig myself a big enough hole, if I'm 100,000 appraisal gap and I have to come out of pocket to do that, and I got to come out of pocket to do all these repairs and everything else, all of a sudden that hole can get a lot deeper than we had planned on, and our back can be against the wall before we start. And this is not a game where you want to start with your back against the wall.
Right.
Because you really are going to need that capital to set this property up, create that unique immersive experience, all of those different things to really make, you know, continue to operate toward the top of the market. It sounds like the property is operating pretty well. Not super familiar with what would be required there, but it looks like there's a big unknown, and 100% where you said you're cautious about taking that number at face value, you should be very, very cautious on that. At the very minimum, extend your due diligence if you're running up against a timeline. If not, and you've got plenty of time, make sure you're getting good. Like, the inspector is one person that kind of highlights possible concerns, you know, and if it's a possible concern with something major, like a foundation, we need to get the professionals in there, figure out what it's going to take to mitigate all those different things so that we can make a more educated decision on, do we want to move forward or not? And I also would run my numbers and say, hey, listen, based on these numbers, what is my net revenue every single year? So I can figure out how long, because basically you have to take that net revenue and catch yourself up on the negative equity side.
Yeah. This seems scary to me. This seems like of course, you know way more than me, man. I'm just thrown out here. When I read something like that and I hear you talk about it, I go, this seems two things. This seems like it has a lot of red flags. What if something happens 3 years down the road with the foundation and now you're now in this hole? Or even this makes me think, when we go back and we talk about buying a lesser property so you can really stand out with the design and the other things, I go, if the seller's mindset, maybe the seller knows that something could be wrong with this, but they're not dropping. The appraisal came back and they want to stay up. They didn't really drop that much. And then you have these possible issues. This just seems scary. But you know, if it makes sense and stuff, you know,
it's still, I would never just walk away right on the service unless I just knew, oh man, I don't want to deal with it.
Okay.
Like, let's figure out what we're actually dealing with. Something sound way scarier than they actually are. Right.
Okay.
It might sound scary. Yeah. We dive into it and they're like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. Right. And so that's why it's always good to make sure you peel back multiple layers of the onion when you start figuring this stuff out and deciding, okay, does the whole deal overall make sense? What is my long-term goal with the property? Yes, it's going to be a 5 or 10 year hold. Maybe I take 2 years to catch up my negative equity because it does so well cash flow wise. Looking at all those decisions can help you make it, you know, the best decision for you and your portfolio because, you know, based on my goals, I might make a different decision than what you might make based on your goals. And so it's important to know and use your property goals as your North Star as well, because, you know, I bought properties where people are like, man, you're crazy. You're way overpaying for that. I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to catch up in 2 years. I'm going to hold this thing for 10.
Yeah.
It's going to be golden after that first 2 years. Right. And so, but a lot of people are like, I'm not dealing with the first 2 years on it. Right.
Yeah.
And so they might make completely different decisions on different properties. I've had that plenty of times. This could be one of those situations, but I feel like that there's a big unknown in the middle of that. And it really comes down to the inspection. The other thing that we didn't talk about is I have completely disagreed with appraisers more than once in my life.
Yeah,
and
true.
Where I have had a property come out and not appraise. And it was a really crappy appraisal because we knew the values. We know what we know the area. We knew the values. It didn't appraise. We end up having a similar thing where you're covering an appraisal gap on a property that we felt like should have appraised higher. And we're just dealing with it. It's a pain in the butt. But at the end of the day, I'm not underwater on property.
Yep. Okay. So now here's my question to you. What would be the first thing they should do? Should they run the numbers first, or should they get somebody out there to check the foundation stuff? That way they can understand what those numbers are going to be. Like, what would be the first move for them in this scenario?
So they should have already run the numbers.
Okay.
Underwriting numbers, as far as like before you go under contract, make offers, you should be running your revenue potential, market revenue potential, all those different things. So they probably have a good idea on that numbers. So yeah, the next step right now is we went through the inspection.
Yeah.
Now we got to get the professionals in there. One, I want a structural engineer. Anytime I hear foundations, I'm getting a structural engineer to look at it and give us an opinion. Then we'll talk about what needs to be done, get a repair. You know, like I said, some things can be repaired pretty easy. Other things require a lot more and you may not want to deal with it. So yeah, now the next step is let's figure out what it's actually going to cost. Like, what are we really dealing with?
Right. You're going a little bit deeper. Okay, that makes total sense.
I don't think we're in an environment right now, though, that is conducive to overpaying for properties. So what I mean by that is, like, I might disagree with the appraisal amount, and I think, hey, listen, 1.3 is the property's worth that, right? If the property really is worth 1.25, we're not in that environment where you're dealing with multiple offers and competing and paying over value. And so I feel like that there is that component as well to say, hey, listen, every real estate environment's a little different. We're not, like, right after COVID, if you wanted to get a house locked up, you were overpaying for property, right? Essentially. And we had to figure out how to make that work, right? Now, we're not in an environment where you're really overpaying for property. If anything, you're getting a discount.
Okay.
And so think about that as well.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Now, shout out to Josh Lehue. We're going on to our next topic. Josh Lehue, love this, man. I saw this in one of our groups, STR Data Sense. He posed the question, what is a Vodicy signature property? And I thought that was a great question. I want to piggyback off it, kind of just dig into it. You know, is it the photography? Is it the design? Is it all the things we've talked about putting it together? But, you know, what even is that?
Yeah. So we talk about the Vodicy signature recipe, the Vodicy signature properties all the time, right? And so my definition is one of those properties that has gone through the entire process of underwriting, acquisition, setup and management, marketing, everything, all of the boxes have been checked. The T's are crossed, the I's are dotted.
Yeah.
Visually speaking, you can tell a Vodicy signature property because it has a differentiating feature to it, and it looks like it when it comes to design. And like you can very easily tell, like we have people all the time. How many times do people send us over or talk to me on our coaching calls and be like, I know this is one of our Vodicy family members because it's obvious, right? The fingerprints all over it. And so it does, like, the visually speaking, there's a very specific type of design that we do, and it's really creating these immersive experiences with a lot of customized artwork that really nobody else does. You just won't see it on, you know, the design. Our Vodicy signature design is not coming out of design school, right? They're not teaching it in design school.
Right.
And so, in fact, a lot of the designers cringe at it and say, we're not doing it, right? And so, but what we have found is we have a specific recipe that works really well that gets the consumer to book our properties above and beyond everything else. It gives them a reason to pay us more than everybody else's properties, even the beautifully designed properties out there. And so the Vodicy signature property is leaned into that concept of saying, hey, listen, I want to give the consumer something unique, something personalized, and something different. And those three things, when we pull that off, they're willing to pay us more and book us more often. And so we call that our Vodicy signature recipe. It really does that design part of it, and that creating that immersive experience part of it really does probably 95% of the heavy lifting when it comes to marketing our properties, right? But the Vodicy signature recipe is everything that we do from start to finish. It's getting the right loans. It's working with the right finance people. It's understanding acquisition and putting, you know, making the right decisions that work for our property goals. None of that you can see on the front end, right? It's still part of the Vodicy signature recipe. Making sure we understand from the tax side that the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, and we're maximizing these properties not only from a revenue standpoint but from a tax standpoint. And so, what is a Vodicy signature property? It's somebody that is plugged into this process and those three major phases with those nine steps and all of our expert advisors, like the Vodicy signature recipe. You notice I don't call it Sean's signature recipe anymore. It's not this process is not my process anymore. We are so far beyond that. The collective experience and the collective expertise that we have inside of Vodicy is unmatched. You won't find it. You just won't. I know, and I think there's a lot of great people out there in this space. You will not find what's inside of what Vodicy has to offer. And this paint by numbers process that we call it, and when they jump into this blueprint is, you know, it's just dialed in, which is why we call it the Vodicy signature recipe.
Man, I'm sold. I'm sold, man. I love it. Okay, that was a fantastic answer. I loved it. Okay, moving on to number seven. Is, say, someone who doesn't do they don't follow Vodacy all the way. They don't want to go with the design. They want to do it themselves. Things aren't just aren't working out. Maybe X, Y, and Z happened. Plug it in, whatever your reason is, and maybe a couple of years down the road, it's not working out. So my question is there any kind of backup plan? Could you take that short-term rental and turn it into a long-term, a medium-term? I mean, anything. All right. Is there a backup plan for this?
Usually not.
Okay.
And I say this with all the, you know, understanding. Mm-hmm. So when somebody listens to me say this, I understand that there's always exceptions to mm-hmm. every rule. Mm-hmm. There are some properties that do have some crossover. If mm-hmm. it doesn't work as a short term, it can work as a long term. It could work as a midterm.
Right.
Normally, though, not. Most properties, mm-hmm. and it's not unique to short term rentals. It's unique to real estate in general. Mm-hmm. Most properties are built mm-hmm. for there's a highest and best use for a certain area, certain proximity, certain property mm-hmm. of what the highest and best use of that property is. Mm-hmm. When we underwrite short-term rentals and we want to operate in the top 1% of a market, the very top properties in a market, mm-hmm. they're going to be set up for their highest and best use to be short-term rentals.
Right.
Their highest and best use, if it doesn't work out as a short-term rental, probably you're not paying the bills if you turn it to a long-term rental. Mm. The reason, like if that was true, mm-hmm. if I could take a property and pay my bills and make money as a long-term rental, we would all do it.
Right.
Short-term rentals allow us to go buy higher quality assets in higher quality areas that tend to appreciate at a little bit better clip because of that, and allow us to cash flow them, allow us to make money and cash flow them. If I could go cash flow and make money as a long-term rental with a lot of these different properties, I mean, most of us would do it. It's a hell of a lot less work and it's way cheaper on the front end, right? Mm. One of the drawbacks of short-term rentals, we talked about this last week, mm. was the front end cost to create and set up these unique experiences, mm-hmm. right? I don't have to do that with a long-term rental. So I can save a significant portion of upfront capital and throw one of these properties on as a long-term rental. I make this argument all the time to people when I hear them say, well, you just want to make sure it underwrites as a long-term rental as well. You're golden. You make three times as much money as a short-term rental, but if it doesn't work, throw it as a long-term rental and it'll work. Mm. No, that's not true. I mean, call a spade and say, no, if you screw it up as a short-term rental, your option is probably going to be to sell it, or you're going to have a significant negative cash flow as a long-term rental. Mm. Midterm, maybe, maybe not. You have to look at that. Again, midterm rentals are not, you know, there's certain, you know, vacation destinations that don't have much of a midterm market, right? There may or may not be a market for a midterm renter, right? Mm. What are they coming in for? Midterm renters are usually coming in for work, contract work. Mm. And so are there things that are bringing contract workers in? And mm. whether that's nurses, whether that's government employees, whether that's just, you know, there's all kinds of building the data centers, actual contractors. Mm. You know, there's certain areas that just don't have a market for that. Mm. And so it always kind of bugs me when you hear people saying, yeah, get into it. And then if it doesn't work out, you could do this. Mm-hmm. And that's my immediate flag that goes off in my head saying, I wouldn't trust anything else that person says, because mm-hmm. they're going to lead me down a road that sounds really good, mm-hmm. has really good talking points, but mm-hmm. the reality is it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Like I want to talk to somebody that's like, hey, listen, here's how this is going to work and here's how it's not. Most real estate is like that. Mm-hmm. Take an apartment complex. Take these commercial buildings, downtown urban centers. Like there are a lot of commercial properties are running into problems, these big office space properties after COVID. And they're like, what do we do? Like, let's just turn these into apartments because there's an affordable housing shortage. Well, that's a lot easier said than done. Mm. Like there's a lot of them that are like, okay, maybe we want to do this because we're dead in the water as an office space, but this property was set up as an office space. It's not set up as a living space. And so mm-hmm. we have to go in and completely all this construction, redo it, whatever else. And there is a market for some of those mm-hmm. in those urban centers for affordable living spaces. Mm-hmm. And so they actually have demand for it. In our world, in short-term rentals, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of demand in certain areas for long-term renters or mid-term renters.
Right.
And so you kind of have to figure that out. And even if there is demand, mm-hmm. what you're paying for some of those quality assets, mm-hmm. they probably aren't going to cash flow when you change the game on yourself, when you decide to do long-term or midterm. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. And it makes me just think, if you just shoot yourself in the foot, if you don't go with the Vodacy signature recipe, if you're going to go with this, then you're not going to do
there's
this.
There's our plug. See, we don't run sponsorships, but we do plug ourselves plenty.
Right? I mean, come on, though. I mean,
it's our show. We should plug ourselves, right?
Yeah. All right. That's really interesting.
No, but it is true. There's a highest. Think of it as that. Think think, what's the highest and best use of this? Can I make money as a long-term rental? Can I make money as a midterm rental? Because to be really honest, those things are cheaper and easier on the front end. I will, like they are. And so if you can, you probably should from the beginning. You probably shouldn't do short-term rental from the beginning if you're able to make money the other way, because you save a significant amount of money on your upfront cost because of that setup cost and that furnishing cost and the design cost and all those different things that we're creating these immersive experiences for. Even as a midterm rental, you're not leaning all the way in like we do as a short-term rental. You're going to go a little bit more, you know, cookie cutter model homey type style of design.
Yeah, that also makes me think about the lifestyle aspect use of it as well. If you, I mean, if you don't want to use it, then I guess it makes more sense for long term, right?
There's a bonus of that, no question. There's the tax loophole bonus. So I mean, the minute you turn it to a long term or a midterm, you're disqualifying yourself for the the short term rental loophole because it has to have an average lease length of less than 7 days. All things to consider for sure.
Yeah,
but again, it's understanding that game you're playing and walking into it with your eyes wide open and then saying, hey, that's, if I'm going to go play basketball, my fallback is not, well, if I suck at basketball, I'm just going to turn it to a football game.
Right.
It's like, okay, we have to change. We have to go from the court to the field. We have to change the balls. We got to put pads on. Like, there's a lot of changes to go from one sport to the next. And no different from short-term to long-term to midterm.
That makes, when you talked about the proximity to the profit drivers, that makes total sense to me. Like if you're like living a condo on the beach, that's different. It's a completely different environment, you know. Okay, that makes complete sense to me. I like that. Last topic here, number eight.
Okay, wrapping it up.
First day of fall was it yesterday or today? And seasons are changing, so my thought process goes to people need to start, do they need to start changing their lifestyle photography, maybe put some pictures of the colorful leaves if you have that kind of thing, maybe some hot cocoa. I mean, what is, or do they need to start redecorating wreaths on the door? Or what kind of, what does that kind of look like?
Yeah, 100%. I would, if you are in a seasonal market where it geographically, like it changes, right?
Right,
you
right.
got the,
of course.
The leaves on and everything like looks different in the fall. For sure, this is when we should be flipping up from our summer photos to our fall photos. And if you're your first year, in operations, this is when you should be scheduling to get those fall photos so that you have them for next year, right? And so your first year, you want to make sure that every season that changes, you have, you don't have to do new photos of the inside necessarily. You have to do photos of the outside, right? Drone photography, photos of the area. If you're in an area like in the mountains or something, you have the views and you have the leaves changing, all that, you want to do that. The scenes that you set, right? You know, like you like having the hot cocoa out or the apple cider. We have we have properties where we have the hot apple cider out and the blankets out. And
yeah,
the, you know,
yeah,
and you can tell it's a, you know, crisp fall day and we're sitting out there with the blankets and around the fire.
That's exciting.
So you want to, you want to start articulating that right now. Yeah. If you are going to be, some people decorate a property for Christmas. And so as you start to get toward the holidays, you know, you might want to go in and decorate, like throw the Christmas tree up or whatever you're going to do. Like get that a little sooner than where you're, when you're actually going to set it up, so that you can also layer those photos in if you are going to decorate and set a property up for Christmas. Now, if your property is decorated for Christmas and you start to book out most of December, and when most of your bookings are done in December, pull the Christmas photos off so you start booking January and beyond, right? And so you don't want to leave those up. Even what I've seen some properties where they're completely booked out from Thanksgiving to Christmas, and they do that in October or November, and then they leave the Christmas photos up through December because we're still in the Christmas season. You don't want to do that. You want to pull those down because you're not trying to sell that that time in your property anymore.
Okay.
Now we're moving on to try to sell the winter.
Okay.
Right. Which could be Christmas, but a lot of times in these areas, I start selling skiing and all that kind of stuff for January, February, March.
Okay.
And then you're going to roll back to summer. Oh, now is a perfect time to get those fall photos up.
Well,
or scheduled.
Right? There you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, should people just take them themselves or should you get somebody out there?
It's hard. People don't take good photos.
Right. I don't need to tell you that.
People don't take good photos.
Right.
Just hire somebody that knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? and get good photography done on your on the exterior, especially drone photography. It doesn't, it's not that much. It's not another lifestyle photo shoot. Like, we spend a lot of money on our lifestyle photo shoots. You don't have to do that every time. Just go get the seasonal photos of the area, spend $300 to $500 and somebody can go get some really good seasonal photos of the area and drone photos of your property.
I love it. That's, we hit eight things today, man. We awesome, eight man. Topics, jam packed, full.
I mean, all investment related. Yeah. We didn't get into any of the the bullshit going on politically and everything else. Like, it was good.
No, this was a great one.
Okay,
45 minutes, man.
Okay, awesome, guys. We will wrap it up. We know your time is valuable. We appreciate you spending it with us. If you got any value out of the show and you know somebody else would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things help us a lot. We don't run ads or sponsorships, so by you sharing it or liking it or reviewing it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, those things help us a lot and matter to us, and we thank you for that. And the final, most important thing at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Cheers. Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.